We the voices behind the faith of the Hawaiian nation, the Hawaiian race. Rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e, e ala e. We the voices behind the face, the Hawaiian nation, Hawaiian nation. Rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e.
Good morning and welcome to Pilikia Opono. Mauna Kea Trask and Maka'ala Kaumoana join you once again. Pre-recorded today because of some scheduling conflicts, but we are thrilled that you are listening to us. And if you hear something that interests you or entices you to share with others, please know that you can find the recording on kkcr.org in the archives. We're very happy that KKCR offers this service to our community and pleased that they don't just burn these things when we walk out of the studio. It's a good location. It's a great website. It's a good location to find lots of good content. And it's a good location to donate. So hit that donate button. Not if you don't want to do it on because of this show, that's fine too. But there's lots of good reasons to donate to KKCR. The most important one in my mind is the fact that it is a community radio station. So no corporation is telling this radio station what to say or not say. And they're certainly not telling Maka'ala what she can say and not say. There are some limits. But the point of all of this is having conversations that the people can engage with and argue with and learn from and all of the above. So good morning, Mauna. We have had a brief chat about what we think we're going to talk about today. And we're going to start with a little bit of a wind-up of the last program. We're going to begin with, we were talking about Makahiki, and we did sort of describe all the things that that means and so forth. So what comes after Makahiki? So Makahiki sort of ends when Makali'i flies out of the sky and you can't see it anymore. Still there right now, folks. Mm-hmm. So it's the Pleiades, for those of you who speak a different language. And it's been rising steadily every night. It's fun to track it in the sky. It's also on the front of the Subaru car.
Subaru.
And I still don't know why. I need to speak with Mr. Subaru and see what he was thinking when he used Pleiades. Amazing how many people own those cars and don't know that that's a real constellation. Or that it's Makali'i. So, Makali'i is on its way up and out of our viewplane. And what comes next after that?
Yeah, so... good morning, everybody. Aloha kayaka. Ha'oli makahiki ho.
Yes.
So makahiki's from about late October to late January, because Hawaiians had two seasons, not four, right? And generally 11 to 12 months, but not the same months as the Gregorian calendar. So late January, makahiki would end, and we'd be back in Haipule. So that would be... all religious rites and practices associated with Ku, god of government, statecraft, and war. And that was 8 months. So Makahiki, 4 months. Haipule, 8 months. And that was the majority of the year. So just back to business. Like everyone, you know, yesterday. Back in the office. 9 to 5.
Some people.
Kapu system.
Yeah. But, yeah, rules again.
Rules.
And no more games. No more fooling around. And you could...
taxes
if
paid.
You wanted to.
Yep.
Yeah, so you had paid your taxes at that point, and were feeling a little righteous, but, you know, you'd done your duty, and you'd had your fun and games.
That's what it was.
And you'd probably hooked up with the Wahine in the next village.
Yeah.
Well, the times were good. But it's all over now. It's back to the fields.
So not yet, you're right. So end of the month. So next time you'll hear this, what, midweek or mid-month, right? We do these.
Yeah.
And then February.
The second Wednesday of every month.
And so, you know, to think about it, I always like, you know, Captain Cook came 1778 during Makahiki. It was great. Lono had returned in his prophetic boat, floating island with hogs and birds, and the sails looked just like the standard, you know, the Lono staff. And was wonderful. He had a great time. Traveled back up to the northwest, looking for the northwest passes, get some furs. Mass breaks, comes back 1779 in late February. Different. Mm-hmm. Very different. And it was back to business. So he comes in.
Expecting the greeting that he had had once before.
Yeah, he didn't get it. People were like, yo, why are you here?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't your time.
This doesn't line up with our season.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, remember me? I want all the same provisions, be treated the same. And they're like, this isn't your time.
You're not the god this time.
And so, you know, one of the things we talked about last time was Olelo no Iao, the only, if you look at Makahiki, the only saying was kind of lamenting the pain of taxes. Like, you know, you don't get nothing in Makahiki, so enjoy what you have today, because during Makahiki, the chiefs and kahuna took everything, and there was no reciprocity. But in the Haipule, it was. You traded. So...
key difference.
Yeah, key difference. And so when Captain Cook came back, he experienced this trade economy. So they had given him provisions, and they wanted nails. That was their big thing. Hawaiians had a word for iron. Even though these islands don't have, you know, metals and minerals that you can extract, they knew of it because, of course, like our beaches now, things float up on the shore. So they understood this. There was this material that was harder than anything, and they could use it. And they saw that Captain Cook them had a ton of it. And so they took one of his little boats, you know, that they used to paddle ashore, and... then they just stripped it of nails. And so Captain Cook...
Boats don't float that way.
No. And so then Captain Cook needed, I think rightfully described as too high-handed a visitor by Beckwith. He went to shore and said, kidnap Kalani Opu'u. And he said, I'll give you your chief back. You give me the boat back. And they kept the boat and they took...
They couldn't keep...
Took
the
his
boat
life.
Wasn't much of the boat without the nails.
That's right. And
you
then,
can't give
you know...
it back, bro. We took your nails.
He met his end on the rocky shoreline of Kealakekua Bay. And right, so that's where we're going to.
Okay, this is the next season, folks.
Yep.
So have at it. You know, this is it's back to work, but it's also back to reality of real life and how things function in your village, whatever your village is.
And these are traditional and customary practices, right? Yeah. We're not putting any value on this. This is just the way it is. And because if you look, and I always say stuff like this, is that like, Hawaii is not a paradise. It's just a place. You know, it's a hard life. And I think people who know, you're born and raised here, you live here long enough, you know, to live here is to fight. I mean, nature is that invasive species are fighting with native species. It's just a constant struggle. You know, life is two-sided. And Hawaiians understood that. And I think that, and we can call it beautiful, we can call it good, I do. But again... the idealization of it, the romanticizing of it. I don't know if that's appropriate, right?
Yeah, nor useful. Mm-hmm. Nor useful. I mean, the only person that's going to help is the travel agent, because once they get here, they're going to realize that that's not the case anywhere. You know, it's not true anywhere. Yeah, it's interesting because this month of January, the Hawaii State Legislature does not work full-time, folks, although don't ask them, because they say that they do, but they're not in session full time. So January they go back into session, and pre-session for a couple of weeks they are doing briefings to supposedly inform themselves, and they do kind of a catch up with departments and divisions to see where everybody is and what the needs are, so that they can produce legislation to support the operations of government. And one of these briefings occurred yesterday. Actually, it was all day long. Good news is you can watch this on YouTube. You know, watch as little as you can tolerate and go away and come back. but they were talking about invasive species, and it's a serious thing. So this stuff that floats in, or this stuff that comes in, when you invite people to your place, yep, they bring the bad stuff with them. And some of it is we spend a lot of money on it because some of it is a real threat to our agriculture. But we were talking about traditional practices and the difference for me. I brought this up with Monica because I got in a conversation on social media about the difference between a traditional practice and a habit, or a practice that you have borrowed because you think it's fun from another culture. And this time of year, we see evidence of one of those big time. That's actually dangerous, and that's fireworks. So I asked Mona to talk a little bit about traditional practices, because, in fact, we throw that term around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When we want to do something, when we want to do something, we just call it a traditional practice, and then we just do it, right? Well, that's not really how it rolls. It's mm-hmm. not how it's defined. But there are legal definitions of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to lean on something, remember that guy in Kalalau?
Pratt.
Yes, Pratt. That was a famous case, Judge Rothstein, who, you know, these are traditional practices. Well, in fact, they weren't.
Well, yeah,
planting papaya in a place that wasn't yours, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, so he really took it to the mat.
Mm-hmm.
He really used, in my mind, I'm sure there's other case law that I'm not familiar with, but in my mind, that was a test of a traditional practice, and it was place-based, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this place, we practice this way, right?
Yeah.
So is that in the law or no? Just the practice definition is in the law.
Yeah, so traditional customary practices, that we're not talking about traditions and culture and custom or culture. And that's the thing with,
you know, it's called that.
Yeah, because it's like it's an amorphous term, right? Who knows what culture is? And when you study anthropology, that's the whole thing. What is culture? What is tradition? But when you talk legally, it's a defined legal term of art, right? So then you got Article 12, Section 7. You got HRS 1-1. You got HRS 7-1.
So Hawaii revised statutes,
yep.
And he's citing the Constitution first, and then
Article 12, Section 7, right?
Right.
And
right.
So generally they say, Article 12, Section 7 is the state, including the counties, shall protect traditional customary practices of Native Hawaiians.
But they don't define them.
What? Native Hawaiians? Yeah, right.
They just say they will protect them, but they don't. Yeah.
And so then that's the whole thing, like, To understand the law, you got to research everything, and so you can't just take things out. Everything is out of context. You have to read it what they call impera materiae, which is in the context of everything. And so you have the Constitution, which was written. And so in this case, I was 78, right? So your guys' generation, Hawaiian Renaissance, they did all this really good stuff.
Just for effect, he's pointing at me, by the way.
Yeah. Born in 48.
Yeah.
Talking. So the boomers did that well.
Another thing on the...
And then you have HRS 1-1, which is the statute regarding common law in Hawaii. So it's English common law as defined by American and English decisions and Hawaiian custom and usage or something like that. And so that law was passed on November 25th, 1892. Okay. And so, in a lot of our laws, the fundamental laws in Hawaii are kingdom laws. They're still there and they still have effect.
This is what people don't understand that come here and tell me that we need to protect our waterways. We need to protect. I said, yeah, whoa. You don't understand. We have those laws.
Yeah.
Those laws are way, way, way back.
And so you bring up a good point. So a couple of things. So traditional customary practice, getting back to the stuff, is that which is established as of November 25th, 1892. So if it was after that, it's not a traditional and customary practice as protected by the law. It can still be our tradition and culture. So like a big one when I was at county was driving on the beach. right? It's a local tradition. You can drive on top of the
beach. But it's a habit.
Well, I don't...
I mean, how could it possibly be an old law when we never had cars? I mean, it never made sense to me.
Yeah, and so...
Access to the beach, yes.
Yes. But I wouldn't call it a habit because they're bringing in another term. It's not legally defined. And then we're going to get into a semantic argument. What's a habit? What's a thing?
Okay.
So let's just look at the date. Okay. You didn't have Tacomas on...
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
November 25th, 1892. So it wouldn't be. But even then, so... Say, like, HRS 7-1, it's the Kuleana, it's the codification of the Kuleana rights. So if you own a Kuleana lot in an Ahupua, you have the right to ahu core, tea leaf, firewood, house timber, stuff like that. Specifically, a certain set of natural resources, right to water, right to access. If you don't own a Kuleana, it doesn't apply to you. But you cannot claim... the right to go get guava, right? You can't have, because there was no guava then. So that's not a traditional customary thing. So
yeah, by the way, folks, it's not a native plant.
Yeah, but even too, if there are tea leaf, right? Everything is qualified. So when you look at traditional customary practices, you have to look at, they call it the specific, you know, facts of the case by case basis. So we're next door neighbors. And you got tea leaf like pretty much everyone does, or used to. I don't think they do anymore, actually. But if you still got tea leaf in your yard, and you have a house and it's fenced, I cannot, as your neighbor, irrespective of if I have a Kuleana lot or not, go into your more than fully developed property and take your tea leaf. Right? Can't do that. And so all traditional customary rights are subject to the state's right to reasonably regulate it. And that's the law, right? What is reasonable regulation? What are the facts of the case? Because it's traditional and customary in ancient Hawaii, as far back as anyone can conceptualize, that everything was regulated too. You had seasons, you had kapu, you couldn't just do whatever. It was always subject to the right of reasonable regulation. And so that's what we're talking about, right? So our culture has, and it should, evolve and change. And I do think, like, I mean, Chinese New Year is, you know, I'm part Chinese. Chinese been in North Shore of Kauai since the 1850s. Hawaiian Chinese are all there. But it's not a traditional and customary practice, right? Chinese New Year.
So that was my point in this discussion on social media, was that fireworks are Chinese.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to practice a Chinese...
No, I'm a complicated, though. So the interesting thing
it's
is...
It's going so well.
Because, so that date, November 25th, 1892, that's a late date. You know, we've said this before.
Yeah, it's almost 1900.
Yeah, it's not 1778. It wasn't contact. It's not pre-contact. It's 1892. I've said overthrow in the past. That's incorrect. So the good thing about these archives is you can go back and
listen to what you actually
said.
Yeah,
you
said.
Can say, you were, it's like, Mono, you were wrong. It's like, no, I know, I'm constantly wrong. It's fine. But I'll correct it. So it's not the overthrow, but it's on or about the same time. But so what does that mean? So you look at the, like we talked about 7-1, you have right to access. I think it was Oni versus Meek. What this case was, this person had a Kuleana and the guy cut off access. And, or he had access, but he wanted to expand it. He had a vehicle. Or maybe it was a horse. I'm not sure. But anyway, Hawaiians didn't have any beasts of burden. It was all footpaths, right? They walked everywhere. But this Hawaiian, it was later, and he said, you know, I shouldn't be restricted to walking, right?
When I get one good horse.
Yeah, and we had horses since the 1820s. And so the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can get 10-foot wide path. It's not just walking.
To fit your horse.
That's right. And so the interesting thing about traditional customary practices is that the underlying, everyone thinks that it has to be that which you practice in a malo, right? Like, oh, hunting. You can't use gun.
Full on all the way.
Yeah. Well, why not? They had guns in 1892. 100%. Right? So and they had, and like I said, just correct myself right now, 1854, Chinese came. That's 40 years before 1892. So then, What is a traditional customary practice as of the law? And the interesting thing is, is that all the Hawaiian rites, and even their creation, was in reaction to development. And, you know, I don't know of a better term, but like it's regressive. So it's like the idea that let's take it back into a better, more pure time, right? So our rights weren't defined by a series of cases that involved Hawaiians saying, oh, I want to do something proactively. I'm not going against anybody. I want to proactively exercise my rights. It's always like you had Pele Defense Fund. It was geothermal. We want to fight against this geothermal. How do we fight against this geothermal project? Assert Hawaiian rights. It's going to affect our right to gather in this area, right?
That certainly will.
Yeah, and which is not a bad thing. There are fights that need to be had. But that's the only area of law that we have with, you know, and all in the criminal context, it's always a trespass case. Can I go in? You know, I got busted for trespassing. No, I had a right to be on there. So you have this reactive, regressive kind of body of circumstances. And then you got Hawaiians now who want to say, well, I want to do something proactive. And there's really no guidance. And then, and we said this before too, I think that the interesting thing, whether it's a danger or not or whatever, but it's true in the environmental and conservation context, the Hawaiian's value is that of a noble savage whose natural comportment illustrates the deficiencies of modern culture, right? So the Hawaiian always plays a role in the environmental case. Oh, we have the bird scientist. We got the, you know, we got Carl Berg, the water guy. And you're going to have a Hawaiian. And the Hawaiian is going to say, overthrow is illegal, you know, crown lands, all this kind of stuff. And they're going to, but the real one, the argument that is most valid is traditional customary practices, specifically the right to gather, plants or animals, fishing, whatever it is, access. But without that context, the interesting thing is you talked about invasive species. Without people managing, without Hawaiians going in and managing and cutting guinea grass and removing mangrove and doing all these things, terraforming, we lose these islands. I mean, you can't stop this stuff.
But Hawaiians always did that.
Yeah.
I mean, even before they had stuff, bad stuff arriving by ocean or ship, they did manage stuff.
Yeah.
Or the birds flew over and planted something that they didn't, that what didn't belong.
So when you have it, it's really easy to look at these issues and rights in black and white, in good and bad, when you have like an evil corporation doing something bad, like diverting water for bad stuff, like whatever, right? But what happens when, if and when, DHHL ever develops on Ohola?
Department of Hawaiian Homelands.
Yeah. So they have thousands of acres. They have a third of all the water in that watershed. I think they should totally divert streams and dig wells and house Hawaiians. That is their charge. That is what they need to do.
What's stopping them? Fear.
Well, yeah, whatever excuse they got.
Political.
I'll tell you, you give some of my clients thousands of acres, no land use or zoning restrictions,
yeah, look
and
out,
a third
world.
Of all water, yo, we're building it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. So I would love to be in charge of DHHL's development program. We just, you know, build it. Just go. Charge it.
Oh, William Isla did some of that.
But the interesting, you would catch so many cases. People would sue. You would have a really interesting milieu where the old, you know, the conservationist kind of type, the traditional one that we think of, that, you know, are suing to stop water diversions and all these things. Would they take on DHHL? What would happen, right? Because you have the two fundamental constitutional rights coming to head. And I think that's where we're going. We have to. Because
it's a fight that needs to be fought. It needs to, and I hope it's not a fight, but I think you're right, it will be.
No.
But that needs to happen in order for the homes to get built.
You know, I was talking to you talked about legislatures and stuff, and you're right, leg isn't in session, but we do have hardworking legislatures. I think our Kauai delegation is tremendous.
They're there all year.
Yeah. Nadine, Dee. I mean, the fact that Kauai has the president of the Senate, tremendous power and influence.
And the majority leader now.
Yeah. and so.
Power to the nines, folks.
And I was talking to, Representative Eslin the other day, and he's you know, super smart guy.
He's going to be a good one.
Yeah, he's a policy guy.
I can't believe he wants to be there, because to me it's so much spinning your wheels. But he is, you just said it, he's a policy guy, and so that's where he needs to be.
Yeah, and I think, in him and his family, they're great people.
Yeah.
So his big thing is about housing. If those of you who know Luke, huge on housing, and he's very creative, you know, and he just is hardworking. He's very smart. And his big thing is doing everything that we can, but in a way that he's very good about keeping in mind existing regulations, not offending environment, doing all this good stuff, and being politically, astute so he doesn't offend anyone. So one of the things that he did at council, for example, was like the mini homes thing, right? So you can do 500 square feet in the Luhui Town Core. But for me, I mean, that's great. We do need help. But cramming us into smaller and smaller spaces, I don't like. That's just my own personal prejudice. I don't think that, I know my wife and family wouldn't want to live in 500 square feet. It's just shanty towns.
You wouldn't like each other.
No, we have thousands of acres of Class D and E ag land that is garbage. And even the state land use law recognizes that there are lands within the agricultural district that are not suited for ag. So pull them out. That was the de facto classification in the 60s. That's a long time ago. So reclassify it. You know, have the fortitude to do it. Do it. But it's a tremendously big lift. It's a fight. And so a lot of politicians want to have that fight. So one of the issues coming up is, you know, let's repurpose this. Let's do mixed urban commercial use and all this stuff. But that just crams us into smaller and smaller things. And as a Hawaiian family, traditional customarily, you need more space, right?
For your practices.
Yeah, how do you fit three
for
generations in 500 square feet? Can't do it, or less, right? So to me...
Kind of ask the Filipinos, they figured it out. But I think one of the things that I find most difficult, I think most of our listeners know that I spend a fair bit of time over in Honolulu, and you do as well now. over there to attend a meeting, fly in the morning, come back at night. And in the middle of the day, no matter what the meeting is about or what agency is involved, everybody splits and runs to go get lunch, and they walk around town to go get it. And I do not. I get one of them to bring me something back, or I look for a food truck close to the building or something like that, because it is absolutely gut-wrenching to me to see Hawaiians living in concrete. Like concrete driveway, concrete apartments, concrete. I can't stomach it.
Really?
Mm-mm. Can't stomach
really?
It.
Really?
Nah, it just gets me. And it doesn't bother me when anybody else does it. But there's just something gut-wrenching for me about that. So I don't do it. But that my response to that speaks to my understanding of the difference between how people of a place traditionally practice and how they live, and people who have come to that place for another purpose, whether it's work or running away or whatever that other purpose is, and how they need to adjust to that environment. But in my world, in my mind, because those weren't the Hawaiians I grew up with. The Hawaiians I grew up with, they may not have owned the land. Most of them didn't. But they had land, and they were working the land. I mean, I grew up in Kaneohe, that, you know, there's lots of traditional practices going on there of several cultures, mm-hmm. you know, lots of different cultures. But the Hawaiians were always of the dirt, of the land, in the dirt.
See, I take it totally differently. I totally, because, like, Hawaiians, I think if they had concrete,
they would have
fully
built concrete.
Done concrete. Because, like, you know, because if you look, like, not every road, but because it was way better, it's way smarter. I mean, why would anyone travel on these islands in anything but a canoe? It doesn't make sense to walk the valleys, and, you know, it's largely impassable. You only can take what you can carry, right? Because you can't really, you know, you can't burden pigs or dogs that we had, small little Polynesian style, with anything. So... But, like, you go Big Island, portions of the King's Highways are paved. You know, portions of the Ali'i, they put little pebbles, beautiful, smooth little thing. If they had aggregate, they would have totally done it. You know, and then you look up again, 1892. I mean, by that point, they were cutting huge blocks of coral and stacking Iolani Palace. Now, I'm fine with that, but I would rather at this point not build buildings with coral blocks and just go concrete. As long as you can choose. To me, it's agency, right? No, so if a Hawaiian can choose, I would love, like, Kamehameha Schools owns Kaka'ako. Great. You know, that's put them in nice high-rise if you want. I think...
Well, that's the plan.
Yeah, one of the big issues, and me and Luke agree on this, and I'm talking about Luke. I like the guy. I think he's really smart. We have disagreements, as any adult should, but none of this is a criticism. We just have a different perspective. But me and him agree, I think, and this is a hot take, is that the coconut tree rule on Kauai is contributing to ruining Kauai because it creates sprawl, right? We should have, Hawaiians should have the choice to live in luxury, beautiful high-rises on Hawaiian homelands because you can put so many up. You don't have to go out. And if you go up, you can save the out for...
And that was frankly, I've had this discussion mm-hmm. with William Ila, and that was his strong position, and he took action on it. Plans. It was interesting because to that vision, he added the no need for vehicles. There were medical services downstairs in the high rise. There were stores. There was everything you needed was in that building, and so they didn't need to be driving around Honolulu, mm-hmm. which was a real plus. No need 5,000 parking spaces. It was a very efficient way, but it makes me cringe to think that they don't have dirt to work in, that they don't have a connection, a physical connection with the land. Now, I'm assuming some of them that live in those places would have, but few, because they're on the wrong side of the island.
Well, in looking at it, like, I think the only way, when you have a population capacity, and there's certain things we can't do nowadays because, you know, you don't have the counterbalance. So you can have a large population on an island that's generally difficult to create calories on if you highly regulate it. And we've talked about this tremendously. Mm-hmm. A big issue with government is regulation. You can have all the rules in the world. They can be the best rules in the world.
You don't enforce them. You got nothing. Diddly squat.
Yeah. So, but the Hawaiians were all about enforcement, right? Very, very effective enforcers.
Well, they made rules that mattered. So they made rules that were life and death. They made mm-hmm. rules that fed people. They made rules for fighting. They made rules for land usage and so forth. So they made rules that mattered in everyday life. Therefore, they had cooperative enforcement. So others were looking at them and going, okay, we told you, you know, you can't do that because it's not good for, you know.
Well, I think that was definitely the intent. But you definitely had rules that were quite burdensome. So, like, if you read Fragments of Hawaiian History, John Papa'i talks about when he was a kid, he's going through someplace in Oahu, like Eva-ish, and somebody was seen wearing the king's malo. And that was it.
That's like not okay.
And
how did he even get the king's malo?
Well, he wasn't. It ended up not being it.
Of course.
It just looked like it. You know, like they had the fake
that
Gucci.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But they were going to murder everybody. I mean, it was going to go down. Because it was
an insult to your base.
Well, there was no church separation of church and state. The kings were the gods, right? And so this whole superstructure had a lot of intricate parts. It was a house of cards. So you pull away one, mm-hmm. right? The whole thing falls. So, and they had wicked chiefs. And there's a bunch of stories about chiefs taking too much fish and over time the people killing them. I mean, Hawaiians, again, the most effective regicide and god killers, you know, in the system. So when you look at how do you make an ahupua'a work now, I think you need high rises. You need an ahupua'a to be self-sustainable, right? Like you said, William Island, it has to be all functioning independent of the rest. And the way you do that is you have to look at it differently with modern tech. And Kalakaua was big on that. You know, the Halinawa Society was like the temple of science, right? So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he slid through the point, but I did ask him, I did ask Mauna earlier to say that again about, you know, not all chiefs were good chiefs. Not all, you know, there was bad actors even then. Mm-hmm. So we think, oh, man, back in the old days, the Chiefs never would have done that. Yeah, they would. Yeah, they would. Yeah. Lie, cheat, steal. Yeah, they would. Not all of them, obviously, but they were. Just because you had the title didn't mean you were going to behave well.
Yeah, there's legends of good ones and bad ones. And I think, too, that's kind of tied into the lack of ownership. In, you know, Chiefs were steward, the ultimate trustees of the land for the gods. But new chief, new gods, right? When you're in Haipule and a chief, two chiefs get in a fight and one, the new one wins, they're redistributing everything. You know, and so there was no ties to the land.
And that's a real toss the whole community around. I mean, it messed with everybody when there was a change like that.
Exactly. And so nowadays you look at a lot of people are saying, you know, like, and Hawaiian land loss is a huge thing. Kuleana lands, you know, it's the dispossession of Native Hawaiians is tragic. And at the same time, we never owned it. You know, that Hawaiians,
which is part of the problem of trying to claim it.
Yeah, and so it's an interesting thing, and that's why it's complex, and I think it's a really good discussion, and we have a good system fundamentally, I think, now, because at least you can still fight to keep your land, and there are instances that people have done it, but to claim that I've been here since time immemorial, no, you haven't. You know, at best, you've been there since 1850s, at best, because that's the only time you ever got it.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that I was having this me and my social media conversation about was somebody claiming that the fireworks were the traditional tribal Hawaiians have done this forever. I said, first of all, no, they haven't. Mm-hmm. It's a Chinese practice. You want to claim the Chinese practice, I'm fine with that, but don't call it a traditional practice. So for me, the discussion is about traditional customary practices and there's a legal definition of that. And that's not what that is. Mm-hmm. You say you love it. You say you want to have a good time, but...
And even if you do. So even if it was, like, if someone were to put, you know, January 1st was established as of the Zimmering date, right? November 1892. Even beyond that. And this is the going back to Pratt, you said, the Pratt case, the Supreme Court discussed, okay, assume that you establish the three factors in Hanapi, which is Native Hawaiian, traditional customary, and practice on less than fully developed land. What then? Because it's all subject to the state's right to reasonably regulate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing something in drought conditions, there's no way you can do that, right? Because you need to regulate. It'll burn. You'll burn the whole island. So even if you have a traditional customary practice, that's not a free ticket.
And it's not dependent upon a specific date of the Gregorian calendar.
No.
It's not specific to an event. It's specific to an appropriate time and place.
Yeah, but so say, though, you go to you look at Native Hawaiian newspapers or Kingdom newspapers in the 1880s, and I'm not saying there is, but for hypothetical purposes, say Kalakaua goes, hey, we have adopted the Gregorian New Year. This is the Hawaiian thing now, and this is what we're going to do. And it's say that's been established. Even beyond that, does that mean that you can then... I was in Oahu for New Year's, and you're just looking at illegal aerials shooting up from Kaimuki to Kalihi. It was beautiful. I loved it. It's crazy.
It's dangerous.
Super dangerous. And like roofs catching on fire, I heard, and all this stuff. But the state can regulate that, even if it's a traditional or customary practice.
They're not doing a very good job of enforcing it, but they do make rules.
I still think you could regulate it. You know, even to a couple years ago, Haina, they did the Ohai thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was dry, and it burned like 100 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a traditional customary practice, bar none. But was it traditional customary to do it at that time of the year under those circumstances? I don't know. I'm not an expert. But even if it was... If it was dry and it burned, I don't think you could. Legally, right? I don't think that would be protected by the Constitution or HRS.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be appropriate and correct all the way through. One of the things that interested me, because there's now this wonderful video of all of the really beautiful fireworks shows in Honolulu from a distance. So watching some of them from Hulaia or from Heia, across the water. Oh, man. I mean, it's just beautiful.
So
the reflection
nice.
Is so gorgeous. But I was thinking as I was watching that, all those aerials, I was thinking, you know, they busted two big, huge shipments of illegal fireworks in Honolulu when they came into the port. They busted. I mean, these were enormous shipments, huge containers full of all this stuff. And we didn't even touch it. We didn't even touch what actually went off. And they worked really hard, and they did enforce. You know, we do have rules, and none of it works. You know, none of it works. You know, everybody and their Chinese second cousin has an access to, you know.
Oh, everyone. Yeah.
Everyone does.
I mean, we lived in Wyola Street for a little bit, and, I mean, it is a war zone. And you can, and we called the cops because it was like 2 a.m. People were still banging. It was just going nuts. And HPD was like, "What do you want us to do?" Like, yeah. You literally to
exactly
enforce.
Exactly. What would you like me to do?
Yeah,
do you need an ambulance? No. Well, then, okay.
Well, even if you do, how is the ambulance going to drive on the road? It's on fire. You'll blow the. You know, like a cop car has to come in and drive in. You can't drive in.
Can't.
No. So it's like.
No possible way. So. Traditional and customary practices as they relate to today's world, to today's life. I can't claim them if they weren't real. I can't claim them if they weren't appropriate to the place or the time. I can't claim them if they weren't mine, if it's not a practice that I know, that I do. I can't just say, I'm standing here in the nearshore waters practicing traditional customary practices when I don't have a clue as to what I'm doing there. So just being there doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Or even access. I can't say, you know, I need access just because I have my rights to have access. No, you have your rights to have access for a purpose.
Yeah. And so, like, it's a context, right? So, the biggest venue is Planning Commission or LUC or Land Use Commission, some kind of development thing. And so to claim, like, one of the things a couple years back, KIUC's, so this is really interesting. So KIUC doing hydro up in Wailua. I think that's a traditional customary practice.
Because Hawaiians did it.
Yeah, and Kalakaua did it before 1892. They powered Iolani Palace with hydro in Nu'uanu. So I think that's established. And I think it's worthwhile. I think we need that.
I think it'd be a fun argument.
It's great.
Did anybody make that argument at the time?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, KIUC couldn't make the argument.
They could have. You just have to establish it. But the thing is that, and we'll get into that.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, and so some people were claiming, and they did. They diverted water, right? And they were claiming they couldn't huivai, right? Ritually bathe in those waters. But in researching it, I looked up, you know, if you look, Malo doesn't talk about huivai, Kamakau doesn't talk about huivai, but Kepilino does. And Skepilino is kind of a lesser-known Hawaiian academic. He's like Kamakau. He came way later. Influenced by missionaries and foreign admixture heavily. You know, they talk about tribes of Israel stuff. But anyway, but he talks about it. And if you look, Hawaiians did practice huivai in the Ahupua of Wailua, but at the mouth of the Wailua River.
Yeah, why would Makuhiki. You do it up in the...
It's cold.
No kidding. It's
and
crazy.
Like way up there. Everyone lived by the coast. So it's like...
It doesn't make practical sense.
Yeah, and fundamentally, anti-development is not a traditional and customary practice. And so there's a degree of moral and ethical responsibility. Like, you can be against the development, fine. But when people just use traditional customary practices, when they use iwi kupuna, I have a big problem with that because you're using the bones, just like fish hooks, to stop development, right? So you there, and but it's really difficult. These are interesting things because... I mean, it's hard for volunteer commissions of normal citizens, especially non-Hawaiians, to look at a native Hawaiian and say, no, you're wrong. Right? How do you do that? Even as a Hawaiian, I do that, but people do not like it, right? I mean, it's just kind of a natural thing.
Well, and I for me, I remember the KIUC thing because I'm a big hydro supporter, which may come surprising to some people who think that I fought the proposal to... develop hydro in the Hanalei, and I never fought it. I fought the people that were doing it. I couldn't stand the federal overthrow approach that they were taking to Hanalei. And thank goodness for our little snail. Oh, I bless that little snail, that little Newcomb snail. You know, folks, if you've never seen a picture, do look him up. He's teeny, teeny, teeny little snail. And wherever he stay is protected critical habitat. So I don't know why people aren't moving that little snail around more. But we had the snail, and so that really, you know, put the kibosh on everything. But for me, the issue with KIUC and Wailua, interestingly enough, in my own ignorance, was the who, not the what. For what, to me, the traditional customary practice has to be done for the right purposes, with the right motivation, by the right people. Well, that isn't KIUC. So to me, it was the money piece.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So I think that... Well, I think that you're right. You have to be
somebody
made a
wants
point.
To go up there and make hydro, and do whatever they're going to do with hydro agriculturally. I'm way cool.
Correct. So you're right.
But they're going to sell it.
KIUC cannot be a traditional customary practice because KIUC is not a Native Hawaiian and it's for commercial purposes. So you can't do that. But you cannot say that hydro is diametrically opposed to or is antithetical to traditional customary practice. I don't think you could say that.
Right.
It's a case-by-case basis.
Right. So the idea would be if hydro makes good sense, you can't oppose it on the basis that it's not traditional customary practice. You could oppose who's doing it. You could oppose the purpose of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, yes, and Hawaiians, I don't think we can say that enough, how much, and not just Hawaiians. Well, Polynesians and people all over the world diverted water. They made water go to where they could use it. That was the whole point of water. Obviously you settled where water was.
You needed
it. That was,
it.
You know, of course, you know, people would say, okay, and there's water, so I'm going to pitch my tent here. But the second thing they did was move the water to where they really wanted it, you know. I mean, that's what we do.
That's what we do. Yeah. And you look at like, oh, shucks. I missed the point, but I think,
It's what happens when Makala chatters on. It's hard to keep your train of thought. You sometimes he sits with a pen, and I know why, because, yeah. What was I saying? Yeah. So one of the things that we hoped to do in this regular show, was to, the word incite's a little strong, but to encourage, to invite, this conversation. If you want to participate, please send. You can send me an email. I'm perfectly happy with that. Send it to my. You probably for government purposes. You probably ought to send it to my personal email. Which, if you can spell my last name, ha ha ha, then you got it at Gmail. and if you can't spell my last name, ha, you know, out of luck. or you can send an email to KKCR. Give me that. It's not the GM one, but it's gm@kkcr.org. So send them an email and let them know that you want something to be discussed for there, or that you'd like to participate. We're totally up for that. Mauna's sitting over here and paying no attention to the fact that I just offered him up. But I think.
I don't want to argue with anyone.
She said, what?
I don't want to argue with anybody.
That's too freaking early. But maybe not argue, but maybe, you know, fill out the conversation. How has it applied to somebody's, you know, life and practices today? So what practices do you know are your traditional customary practices in your family, no matter what your culture is? What Portuguese practices? Do you make bread? Do you have a bread? You know, I mean, whatever it is. Do you have other fishing? Do you have other Polynesian fishing practices? It's a good time to take stock. This is the beginning of that season and the beginning of the Gregorian year, for whatever false footing that puts you on.
Yeah, no, it's a great new year, right? New time. I think we all can do. That'd be a great thing to look at this year.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you actually practice and what that gets you? To, or at least it gets me to, is what are those things, the hierarchy of what I care about? What am I willing to go to the mat for?
And be proactive and progressive. Like, let's define, like I always say, my biggest concern, and that where I'm coming from now, is that I want Native Hawaiians to have the best life in the land that God gave them. right? Mm-hmm. These islands. And I would just hate in the future for us Native Hawaiians to have an ability to build houses, but we're fighting ourselves in that ability because we have this set of legal precedent that inhibits our own development and prosperity, right? And that's just what it is. Because ultimately, these islands are on the Pacific Plate. They will sink and go into the Aleutian Island subduction zone, and they'll all be gone. This is all a beautiful, temporary gift that we have in this area. As hard as it is to live, as crazy and whatever, it's beautiful. So let's do the right thing, but let's live well in it, right? We don't, we're not relegated to mythic legend, you know, and romance.
Or being stuck.
Yeah.
Or just being stuck in that concrete carport that makes me cry. Just the, you know, get unstuck. And, you know, even, it's not a feature of poverty. It's not a feature of any of that to have a purpose, right?
No, not at all. Nor do you lose your Hawaiianness because you have a PhD or you live in a beautiful condo. You know what I mean? Hey,
hopefully
we're people
you're
too.
Really a Hawaiian at that point and helping other Hawaiians.
Number one.
I think there's some amazing new, maybe some of them are not quite so new, young Hawaiian attorneys around who are doing really good work, good policy work, good cultural supportive work and so forth. I'm excited about some of the ones that are looking at the law and making the law work for the Hawaiians from a very specific perspective. And I can't see how that could ever go badly. I just think, you know, the Hawaiians using the system within which they exist today and using traditional customary practices in an evolutionary way.
Yeah,
you know, not just the building of the canoe, but you know what you do with the canoe, how you grow the lumber, da 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 da, you know, all of that. And as Hawaiians, many of you know that I sit on the board of Kua'aina Ulua Wa Moa, and we are now international. We're communicating with peoples from cultures from all over the world, and when we sit with peoples in Africa and whatever, we all share the exact same angst, you know, the exact same challenges. It's the same. Talk about diverting water issues. You know, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you look at your own world in a small way, if you expand those borders out, those boundaries out, it's all of Polynesia. It's all of planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So the stuff, the work that we do here, my point is, matters. It really matters, and to be able to talk to each other. And the smaller the world gets, communications-wise,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, well, the power is amazing.
Totally, and that's why I think that we should totally embrace technology. We should run with it like, you know, Kalakaua did. And like you said,
electricity and inside bathtub. I don't care what else he ever did.
The Hawaiian boat building industry, my cousin Kalani Nakua, he builds, like he's in the ship making, like 19th century style ships. Hawaiians had a robust shipping industry because the only place look at all the what are those, the they're not Micronesian, the
Satawal.
No, the pine trees.
Oh, the Cook pines.
Yeah, Cook pines, right? Like those are all ship masts. That's why they grew here.
That's why.
Yeah.
I thought they just wanted to tell me where the Haoles lived.
Well, those too. But then at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, traditional and customary.
Were ship masts.
Yeah.
Because they grew straight.
Yes, grew straight.
Okay, yeah. Until the hurricane whacked them, and then they grew two off the top. Those would be, yeah, right? Okay, but they make more. Interesting. Okay, so we're welcoming your input and your comments, kkcr.org. If you know how to spell my last name, that's at Gmail as well. Mana and I would be really happy to take comments and suggestions and maybe not a down and dirty fight about it, but you know, a good discussion is a valuable thing. And please know that this show is regularly scheduled for the second Wednesday of every month at 7 a.m. So most of us, that's our drive time. It will be pre-recorded. This program would be pre-recorded. Ordinarily, it's live. And you can always call the station at that point, and we will let you know when those programs are airing. And invite you to go to kkcr.org to support programming such as this, and to look up the archives, and remind you also that Mauna Kea has generously provided citations and links to all of his reference material there, which is really cool, folks. It's like an important library for you, no matter what is going on in your life. Thank you, Mauna, for showing up yet again. And we thank Laura Christine for showing up yet again. Crack of freaking dawn. We appreciate the support very much, and look forward to seeing you the second Wednesday in February. And we'll be here. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha.
What the land that she can give, defend our birthright to be free, give our children liberty. Hey, Allah, hey, Allah, hey, Allah, hey, Allah.